Welcome back to another episode of the Talk 20s podcast. Have you ever wondered how some people's careers just take off in their 20s, whilst others feel a little stagnant? Well, today's episode is all about optimizing your career opportunities to live a happier and more fulfilled life and make more money. We're joined by the wonderful Kenny Buki, a career and personal growth creator whose career in tech has helped her shape her thoughts on getting the most out of your career and skill set. As ever, we'd love you to continue supporting the show. So hit that subscribe or follow button. Just one simple click helps us more than you can imagine. On with the show. In order to keep bringing you guys tons of free content, we work with brand partners who you'll hear from in this episode, including an advertisement from Zopa Bank. So Kenny, we always kickstart the podcast nowadays by asking people what they were doing this time last year. So I'd love you to look back through your camera roll and show us a picture that probably no one's seen before, or you definitely haven't shared publicly, that gives us a little snapshot into what was going on in your life 365 days ago.
Okay. Should I get my phone and show you?
Yes, please. I'm excited. I'm always so intrigued by these pictures that everyone shows us. So
let's do this. Like, literally no one's seen this picture. It was so random.
Okay.
Like, I was going for my camera roll and I was like, do you know what? This is nice and random. I can show them this one. So let me, oh, there it is. Yeah. So should I show you right now?
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just me in front.
So for me to describe to you guys at home, this is a picture of Kenny with her phone, with a ring light. Is that, you look gorgeous in this picture.
Oh,
love it.
You.
Why has this not been posted anywhere?
God, I don't know. It's just so random. It's just there.
Okay. Gorgeous. So tell us a little bit more about what was going on for you at that moment in time with that picture.
Yeah. So we're in January, and this was obviously last year, January, a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I looked really smiley in that picture because I was quite happy. Mm-hmm. I wish I had a sub story to be like, oh, this time last year, I was so sad and now I'm happy. But just to keep it real, it was a good period for me. It was a stage in my life where I just felt like, do you know what? Things are starting to go to plan, because I went through a long period of things just flopping, or me feeling lost and me feeling like, oh, what am I doing? Or, you know, I just feel a bit stuck. And that was a period of time for me where things really felt like, do you know what? Things are kind of going my way a little bit. Like, I like where I'm at right now, both personally and professionally. And obviously in that picture, you know, I'm like smiling because I was about to film a video. I was getting ready to film a video and I was just like really happy to do that, to like share, you know, what I do now on TikTok and things like that. So yeah, it was just a nice time, to be honest. And it was a good season for me. But obviously after that, you know how life goes. After that, then things went up and down and up and down. But right in that
moment,
it was a good season.
I love it. With a little happy memory that you remember from this time last year. I love that. So before that photo was taken, like, what were you doing with your life to obviously get to the point where you were like, I'm quite happy now? Like,
I think I was just trying to figure out like what was next for me career-wise. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of, trying to figure out what was next for me. I'd been on social media, trying to, like, in the background. You know when you're, like, on social media, but you're not consistent and you're trying to do this, trying to do that? Because I always knew I wanted to do something on social media. I knew I wanted to share something, share my story, but I didn't really know what to share. So I was kind of, like, playing around with lots of different things and it felt like nothing was really going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then in that year, so that was the start of 2023. So towards the end of 2022 is where I felt like, do you know what? Things are starting to kind of look okay for me. And like people, you know, I started sharing, you know, my career journey online, talking about personal finance and things like that. And it started to resonate with some people. And I was like, okay, this is good. Let me carry on with that.
So what had you been doing for work before that date?
I was a compliance analyst and I still am technically. Mm-hmm. So in fintech, so compliance analyst, but sometimes they call me a compliance officer. But I'd been in fintech, worked in lots of different industries. So banking, finance, at that time I was in fintech. So that was like my full-time day job.
And did you imagine you'd have a career in like tech, like when you were younger?
No, I really didn't. I was kind of winging it. Even like early 20s, still winging it. Just kind of like looking at opportunities around me and trying to make the most of like what is around me and what can I make the most out of. Mm-hmm. And I'm still kind of winging it till today. So
so you got quite far though with your tech career. Like tell us about your career trajectory and your journey. I think most people want to know the numbers because a lot of people know that tech pays quite well.
Tech pays. So my career trajectory, I started out after uni, kind of very lost, didn't really know what I wanted to do. Left uni with a good grade, like good first class degree after like failing my first year. But that's another conversation for another day because the transformation was crazy. And then I just felt a little bit lost and then got a mentor, basically, like an informal mentor. She was just a lady that went to my church and she was like, do you know what? Like, I can help you out, like help you work on your CV, blah, 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 blah. And then ended up getting a job in compliance. So I've always been kind of in compliance, but I've worked in lots of different industries. So mm-hmm. at that point it was banking. And then I worked at a startup. And at that point, when I first got in, my salary was around like 28K. And I talk about this online all the time. Like, I'm all about salary transparency, to be honest, yeah. because I feel like, let's talk about it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was on 28K and then I got a job at a startup and then my salary kind of bumped up to 40K at that point. And I think I was like 23. So I was like, okay. Like, there's a way to kind of like play this career game. There's a way to navigate things where like your time becomes worth a lot more. Like mm-hmm. I was very much like, okay, I'm here, I'm working, but I want my time to be worth more. Like mm-hmm. we're all putting in the same time. But yeah, like I want my time, I want to be paid as much as possible for my time. And then I got into contracting, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of like, my very, very first role was like a contract role, but it wasn't like, it became permanent and things like that. But then when I really started to look into contracting was during my third job. And I don't know, some people, like it's not, people don't really know about contracting. Like mm-hmm. I don't really know a lot of people, especially like young people. Like it's kind of this like hidden way of working. But anyway, I found out about it. And that's where my salary really started to pick up, because then I got a contract role. And then for doing the same job, I was getting paid so much more. Although, you know, with contracting, there are pros and cons and things like that. But it just, for me, it really worked. Mm-hmm. And then after that role, I got into fintech, and then that was another contract role. And for some reason, just being in fintech, my day rate was just so much higher than any other day rate I've ever gotten. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where my day rate was kind of like, if you put it together for the year, it was like 100K. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, like, okay. Like, I think I'm in a good space right mm-hmm. now.
So six figures in your mid-20s.
Yes. Like wow. 20, I think it was 26, towards the end of 26.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good. So Thank for people you. Who like don't understand what contracting is, mm-hmm. can we explain it in the simplest terms?
In the simplest terms, contracting is, so we have the traditional, so I'm just going to compare it to like the normal way of doing things.
Yeah.
We have the normal, you know, 9-to-5 job where you're employed and it's just like an employment contract and it's basically indefinite until you hand in your notice for like a mm-hmm. month. That's the normal way of working, mm-hmm. how most of us work. Contracting is basically similar. So you're working a 9-to-5, mm-hmm. But it's just, it's on a project basis. So you're hired for a specific period of time. Mm-hmm. So some of my contracts were 6 months. They'll initially start as a 6 month contract and then you're getting paid a day rate. So as opposed to like a salary, for example, like maybe 30K, you're getting paid like £400 a day or mm-hmm. £500 a day. And some people get paid £1,000 a day, depending on your role and your industry and things like that. And yeah, it's just a day rate, working on projects. And a lot of the times my contracts will get renewed. So it's mm-hmm. like 6 months and then it's like another 6 months and it gets renewed and, you know, 18 months sometimes. I know people that have been doing that for like 10 years in the same place. Like mm-hmm. it really does vary. But because of like the temporary nature of it, you can get paid so much more than mm-hmm. like your permanent counterparts for doing the exact same thing.
A quick ad break from Zopa Bank. See if you could cut your monthly cost by connecting your accounts using the Zopa Bank app. Simply head to the For You page in the app, link your accounts and get personalized insights and tips to see if you could save on your bills or subscriptions. Just search Zopa, that's Z-O-P-A, in your chosen app store. Mm-hmm. And why would a company need a contract role?
Yeah.
Because like, I think that's the main thing. Like, is this available not just in the tech sector, but in everything?
Yeah. Like finance, Big Four. I've been a contractor in Big Four, mm-hmm. Tech, lots of different industries, lots like government. Like mm-hmm. I know people contracting in government companies. Mm-hmm. So the reason why a company would need a contractor is because, yeah, like they're working on a specific project and maybe they don't have enough people internally to work on that project, but mm-hmm. it's like they don't want to bring on someone permanently. So they just want someone to come in, help with this project and potentially leave. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you get extended is when maybe the project goes over and mm-hmm. now the project has gone from 6 months to like 18 months or it just keeps going and going, or maybe someone's on a maternity leave and they need someone to come and fill in that place. Position temporarily, mm-hmm. yeah, bring in a contractor. And then because of like the kind of risk that comes with it, because it is a 6 month contract or maybe a 1 year contract, they pay you a premium to attract you to do that.
Do you think that's always the case? Because I've definitely seen like maternity contracts that are literally 9 months, but the salary is no different. Like,
yeah, it depends what you're doing and mm-hmm. where you're doing it. So mm-hmm. again, it still depends on the skill. Like some skills are ultimately worth more than other skills.
Yeah.
So it depends what you're doing essentially.
Let's dive into it then, because you massively believe in maximizing your skill set and learning those high paying skills. What have you done to be able to do that?
Yeah, I think when it comes to maximizing high paying skills, it's you really have to commit to continuous improvement. Mm-hmm. Like I think that if you want to make sure that you're optimizing and maximizing the opportunities around you, you have to look at ways to add more value to yourself. Is it like learning, like learning a better skill, like pivoting to a different career. Like, you have to look at the opportunities around you and figure out, okay, how can I go from where I want to be, from where I am to where I want to be, and what is in between me and that? Mm-hmm. A lot of the time it's skills. Sometimes it's experience, but you have to get on the ladder. But essentially, for me, it's about, okay, based on the level of experience that I've got and based on the skills that I have, am I earning the most I possibly can right now? Right. So that's always my mindset. Like, whatever I'm doing, I'm always trying to like get the most out of that situation. And yeah, like I said, upskilling, networking, sometimes it takes moving to a complete different space or different mm-hmm. field. Because what's that saying that I saw? Someone said, it doesn't matter how fast you're rowing a boat, but you need to make sure you're on the right boat. Because like, sometimes you're just in the wrong boat. Yeah, you're rowing really, 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 really fast, and you're just on the wrong boat. You need to get into another boat that's going to get you further with the same level of work. I don't know if that makes sense.
I've never heard that saying before, but I can get how it makes sense. Like, yeah. That's such an interesting one.
Yeah, which is why a lot of people are starting to like pivot. Some people mm-hmm. are like, actually, I don't want to be in doing this. I want to be doing that, because then my effort goes a lot further doing that mm-hmm. instead of what I'm currently doing, which is why a lot of people are trying to get into tech and all that.
Yeah. So as a young person then, I think we're constantly called like, I don't know, what's the terms that were snowflakes and things like that, because we like to like jump about, we like to change different jobs.
Yeah.
Do you think this is because we get bored easily? Do you think this is because we're being strategic in the way that we're thinking? Like, what if someone asked you that question about why young people job hop?
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
I would say it's a combination of lots of different things. Mm-hmm. It's nuanced. I think the number one thing is the fact that we have so much more opportunities within our field of view. Like, that I can see on TikTok, for example, that this person's doing that, that person's doing that, this person's doing that, oh, this person's earning that. So I think there's a level of comparison that goes into it, where it's like, oh, actually, no, my situation is not that great. So I really think it's really important to strike a balance, to be honest, because I talk a lot about comparison online, and it's something that I struggle with as well. But I think there's a level of like comparison that happens where it's like, oh, my friend is doing this, I want to do that too. Mm-hmm. Right. So, which is why we're like, oh, I want to move. But then there's also an element of just knowing that we have options now. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have to stay doing this. I can go do that. I can go learn how to do this online. I can watch YouTube videos on how to do this, and then I can move on to do that. And I think there's just like comparison, wanting more for ourselves, knowing that we can do more. Mm-hmm. But there's an element of also getting bored, to be honest, if we're mm-hmm. going to keep it real. Like, you're like, I've been doing this for too long. I want to go. Like, I want to move on to better things.
Our attention spans are short, right?
There is that as well.
And I think it's more that, like, I personally feel like I would like to be challenged in a role. And once I stop feeling, like, challenged by doing something and it becomes samey, or that's when I kind of get, like, oh,
100%.
I'm looking for change.
When it gets repetitive, we're mm-hmm. like, I need to, like, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to talk about in this podcast how to negotiate.
Yes.
Have you negotiated in previous roles, and how did you do it?
All the time. I think since I found out that you can negotiate, like, I think my first corporate job, obviously I was just like, you know, here, like, I just wanted a job, like, please give me a job. Anyone, please, I just need a job.
Yeah.
But I think since I've, like, you know, had those conversations about negotiating, it's always something that I always do it. Like, I can't, it almost feels like I'm doing myself a disservice to be in a position and being offered a role and not try and negotiate it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, always, always negotiate for me.
That's and like, how do you go about that conversation?
How do I go about that conversation? I think the conversation of negotiation always starts for me from like the very early stages of being approached for that role, even like prior to the interview, just kind of setting the scene from those very early stages. So I'm not just catching them by surprise. I mean, it varies. It really does vary on the situation. It depends on how they approach you. And sometimes they say right from the start, this is not, you can't negotiate this role. And then mm-hmm. you just know from the start, I can't negotiate this role. But for me, I think it's really important to just kind of do your research as well. Like, the process of negotiating works a lot better when you are armed with information, when you know what you're talking about. You've done your research, you've gone on Glassdoor, you've gone on Fishbowl. I think that's an app I came across recently where you can see what other people are earning within your industry with mm-hmm. The level of experience that you've got. So when you have that information, it's a lot easier to then try and like ask for the right amount of money. And I always say, never give like a figure, and also never tell them from the jump how much you're earning right now. Mm-hmm. Because what people will try to do is, like, recruiters and hiring managers will try and keep it within that bracket. That usually is what happens. And I get that from a you know, a business perspective, they're trying to save money, but you have to look out for yourself. You have to advocate for yourself. So I never tell them, oh, this is how much I'm earning currently. If they ask me that question, I go back to them with a range of what I'm expecting to earn mm-hmm. rather than, oh, I'm on this, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, go back with a range. I never go to them with a number and be ready to kind of go back and forth a few times as well. And also know how to articulate your value and the unique value that you bring to the table. So if I know that actually I've got this skill that's unique, like I've got this qualification, you know, I've got this many years of experience, I use that in my favor during the, you know, mm-hmm. negotiation process. Like tell them about, articulate that to them. And also just tell them, you know, this is the market rate. This is what people are getting in this role. And you just need to know how to big yourself up, man. Mm-hmm. Like, big yourself up and just articulate your value.
Do you think as women, we find that harder?
100%. Like statistically, that is definitely a thing. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the exact stats are, but women are far, far less likely to negotiate. And actually I saw from the same stats that 9 out of 10 people that negotiate are successful, but women just do it less. So it's almost like if you try, you will be successful, mm-hmm. but we just don't try enough. And I know there's lots of, you know, like conditioning and all these things that we can talk about mm-hmm. that, you know, plays into why, but I think it's important that we advocate for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Are you feeling a little overwhelmed right now? Would it help to speak to someone? Well, this is just a brief pause to tell you about our newest pay partner, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is an app I've often used in the past to speak with credentialed therapists to help me deal with the highs and lows of my 20s. Starting therapy can be hard. I couldn't find the right therapist for me in my area and found the face-to-face interaction of therapy uncomfortable. What I love about BetterHelp is if the therapist you're first matched with doesn't feel like a right fit, which can be common when you're starting therapy, you can easily switch to a new therapist at no additional cost. If you're looking for affordable therapy, check out BetterHelp. And as a thank you for listening, we have a special link that gets you 10% off your first month. Click the link in the description or visit betterhelp.com/talk20s. Navigating promotions then. Obviously, we spoke about negotiating when we're first probably getting into a job. But how, if you've been in a job for a little while, like how do you start talking about that promotion? Like even if you're not sure if there's a clear like stepping stone there in front of you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I think my approach to that is just to be to be transparent with whoever you're reporting to. So whoever, if that's your manager or whoever that is, whoever it is that you're accountable at work, just be transparent with them about your goals. Like that's my approach and everyone has a different approach to this. But I think it's really important to just have that conversation and be like, do you know what? In the next 1 year, this is where I would love to be. Like this is, I would love to be in that next mm-hmm. role. I would love to get promoted and have that conversation with them. And if they're a good manager, they will, you know, a lot of the time, sit with you and put a plan into place. Like, okay, this is what would be expected of you if you want to take on that role.
Yeah.
And have a plan and keep them up to date. Like keep them updated with your progress with that plan, right? Because it's like, it's almost like foolproof. Like there's a plan. Okay, I want to get from A to Z. You talk to them. They say, okay, yeah, if you want to get from A to Z, you have to do this. And then you do this. And actually, in an ideal world, you smash those things. You actually do more than that. Mm-hmm. If you really want to be in a very strong position, smash those goals. Mm-hmm. But then for you to be able to smash those goals, you have to make them unrealistic, which is why you have to work on that together. Like, actually, no, this is what, you know, it has to be realistic goals. And then it's almost like there's a plan in place and you just have to follow through. And it's down to you to follow through and, you know, have those regular conversations. If your one-to-ones are usually like quarterly, you can ask to have them maybe a bit more regularly so that you can kind of have that opportunity to say, oh, actually, look what I've done. This is what I'm working on. And just keep them in the loop and just keep them, you know, yeah, keep them happy with you so they mm-hmm. know that, okay, yeah, this person's actually deserves, they've done the work. Mm-hmm. That's how I approach it.
No, totally. I think for anyone who's starting out, like the more that you can kind of put a plan in place and say, this is where I want to go and mm-hmm. like get your manager on board and be like, help me get there. Like, yeah. I think that's motivating for everyone. It's not just because I think sometimes young people have an element of like entitlement where they're like, just give this to me. Mm-hmm. And like,
I've been there.
That, yeah. 100%. I think we've all been there. Like we're all guilty of that at times. I look back at hours like in some previous jobs and I'm like, oh my God, embarrassing. Yeah. But like, I'm like, but then I did go away and do the work. Like I did say like, this is what I wanted to do and like mm-hmm. set out a clear plan and go, okay, like I know I'm not quite there yet, but like, mm-hmm. I know like I want to get to that. So how can you help me do that?
100%.
And eventually it will work in your favor.
It will work. And you know, obviously when it comes to these things, there are going to be other factors that are out of your control, that you, you know, a lot of places, yeah, especially like big corporations, big organizations, there's usually a lot of politics. Yes. Let's not ignore the fact that there's usually a whole lot of politics, a whole lot going on behind the scenes, people sabotaging each other, people doing the most. Mm-hmm. So we can't ignore that, but I feel like you have to do, and you can't let that discourage you though at the same time.
No.
Because you still have to do what's within your power, because that can still get you, if you don't get to from A to Z, you can get from A to Y, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's going to get you further than it would if you did nothing and didn't put those things in place.
Do you think that we have a problem with entitlement as young people? Because it's all I hear. Whenever I go on a podcast with older generations, I don't know how else to say that nicely, when people who are older, they always say like, Gen Z are so entitled.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
That's an interesting one. I've definitely been entitled. I've definitely gone through a phase where I felt entitled, to be honest. Because I remember there was actually a very embarrassing situation with a previous employer where I literally just asked them. I said, yeah, can I please? I mean, obviously it was like in a meeting and things, but in a nutshell, I was like, yeah, I want a pay rise because I've been here for ages and I just feel like I want to. Okay, I didn't say I feel like I want a pay rise, but I was just like, yeah, I've been here for ages. I can see everyone else around me getting a pay rise. So, you know, I would like a pay rise. And that's so, like, looking back now, I'm cringing so hard because I'm like, that is not how you ask for a pay rise.
No,
And that was super entitled of me. I don't know where that came from, but I guess that's what I heard. It's like, yeah, no, you should get a pay rise. Like, no, you deserve it. But I do think there's a little bit of that, you know, there's a little bit of entitlement that goes on because, you know, all this self-empowerment and, you know,
Also, we see a TikTok and it's like, you should ask for a promotion. So you're just like, I'm going to ask for a promotion.
You're enough. You know, this like self-love movement that I think has been taken to the extreme a little bit because now we're all like, oh yeah, no, I deserve the most. I deserve this. I don't think I deserve anything. I deserve what I work for. I deserve, you know, the things that I'm able to put in place. Nobody deserves anything.
So it's a mixture of doing the work and backing yourself, but you have to do both. Like you have to like back yourself, but you also have to do the work. You can't just sit there and be like, I deserve a pay rise. Like,
like what have you done to deserve it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 100%. Mm. So you talk a lot about how personal finance is so important as a young person. How has your personal finance knowledge grown? And like, what are your key tips that you'd give to someone who's just not got that down?
Yeah. Do you know what? Personal finance is so, so important. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, we all go to work and, you know, everyone goes to work for different reasons. Some people's like passion, but a lot of the time you're going to work to get paid, right? So that just for me shows how, and do you know how much time do we dedicate to work out of our lives? So much, like 9 to 5 for a lot of people. So we can't pretend that money is not important because it is, right? So for me, when it comes to personal finance, it's like, how are you managing that money that you're giving up so much of your time to get? So it's really important how we manage it. And I think that for me, I was very fortunate that I started to take a lot of interest in that topic quite early on, where I just kind of felt like I want to know how to manage my money. And I think from an early age, I kind of realized the freedom that comes with not having to worry too much about money and being in control of your money. I grew up, not necessarily my parents, but just people around me seeing situations where people weren't in control of their finances and how that can really reduce the quality of your life, right? So I was like, okay, cool. Like I wasn't always great with money, but for me, it was really important that I was in control of my finances. I think that's what personal finance is. Personal finance isn't necessarily about becoming a millionaire and, you know, it's about like, how are you managing the lots of money that you do have? Like, exactly, how are you managing it? Are you in control of it or is it controlling you?
And how do you get in control of your money then?
For me, being in control was like having a plan in place to pay off that debt so I can get to the next stage of my financial journey. So after that debt, now it's like, okay, now I need to start saving for a property. So it's like, for me, being in control means whatever is top priority for me is being taken care of. Like for me, whether that's like paying off the debt or saving up to buy my property or saving up to go on holiday, it's like there's a plan. And whether that's automated, whether that's me transferring the money to that pot every single month, it's like, the things that are important are being taken care of.
You mentioned there that you are a homeowner. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ever harder to be a homeowner as a young person in your 20s? Like, how was that process for you?
It is. Being a homeowner for me was, the process for me was a lot, it was a long time coming because I always, even from like the age of like 19, 18, I was like, I want to be a homeowner. Mm-hmm. It was like an aspiration of mine for a very, very long time. So it was like, that became a priority. So after paying off the debt after university, I was like, okay, the next step for me is to own a home. So I was saving aggressively, like over 50% of my salary every month. I was like, that is going into a pot because I need to be a homeowner. And for me, it wasn't just about being a homeowner. I wanted to even like invest in property as well, because I just saw it as like a vehicle for like security, mm-hmm. to secure the future.
Were you living at home when you were saving?
I was living at home while I was saving.
Yeah.
So that's something that I always like to mention as well, because not everyone has the opportunity to save 50% of their salary. And it is a luxury to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And I've only realized that recently because I just thought it was just the norm. But actually, no. Like, mm-hmm. it's a luxury to be able to live at home and save that money. But even for people that don't have the opportunity to live at home, I think, you know, it's important to just find ways to like reduce that expense, whether that's like flat sharing and not renting out like, you know, the whole building, like the whole apartment to yourself, and just knowing that, okay, this is the season for saving so I can get to the next step and like kind of reducing your expenses, living a bit more frugally, mm-hmm. and then knowing that, okay, in the future I can kind of do all the things that I want to do.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people nowadays to be able to save more, because like, honestly, like money is tight, especially if you're, you know, you can't live at home and all those kinds of things. A lot of people to add to their current income are trying to build different streams of income. So they're not just getting their money from their 9 to 5. They're also doing a little side hustle. Now, I definitely have a view on this, but I'd love to hear your view on building multiple streams of income in your 20s.
Yep. I think that, first of all, multiple streams of income, quote, has become a bit of a buzzword, I'd say, online a little
bit.
To like grab attention. And I'm not completely innocent of this. Like, I've used it online because, you know, it does get the people talking. It gets the, you know, the eyes looking at what you're doing. So I think there's a level of deception actually that comes with the whole multiple streams of income, because a lot of people that talk about multiple streams of income are usually like content creators. So for example, they're content creators, and because you're a content creator, you can make money from, you know, speaking engagement, you can make money from brand deals, you can make, so that's technically multiple streams, but
it's really under one job.
It's just under one job. Yeah. So it's a bit of a buzzword, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, for most people who aren't content creators or don't have that kind of, you know, set up, it's just one job and a side hustle, right? And I think that it's important, if you want to have a side hustle, to not get caught up in the whole multiple thing, because what I've seen a lot of people try to do now is like, they feel like the one side hustle they have isn't enough, and they have to like have like lots of different side hustles so they can say they have multiple streams of income. But actually what comes with that is like a lack of focus. So you're not really, so the one thing, the one side hustle that you should be focusing on, you want to try and have 3 side hustles, and then nothing is really getting enough attention for it to actually make you any money.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. I think also it's really hard to start a side hustle. Like, people be like, just create this digital file and people will pay you 20 quid to download it. It's not that easy. Like, it's actually really hard to build multiple streams of income.
It is.
If I wasn't in a creative business where, you know, there are other different things open, and I was just in a full-time job. So say I was still in my old events job, or it was in my teaching job. My view of like what I would do for extra income is I would start a dog boarding business on the side of what I do, and I would look after dogs because I love dogs.
Yeah.
And having dogs in my home would be amazing.
Yes.
That is an example of like doing something that you love outside of what you're doing that brings in a little bit more income that can bump up your salary.
I love that.
But like, I think a lot of people stress that it's got to be like, oh, I've got to create these products on Etsy and I've got to sell this and I've got to go and you know, do consulting and I've got to do this and, you know, all these different things on the weekend. And, you know, and you end up losing, I think, you know, not every single hour of the day should be dedicated to making money, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I think that should be part of your day, but I don't think every single part of your day should be designated towards that. So choose what you love. That would be me, Gabby, in another life, I think.
Yeah. It's like us versus capitalism. It's like, where does it end? Where does it stop?
Exactly.
And I think that's a really, really good point in terms of like, I think a good side hustle, if you're not like a creator or anything like that, is looking at like opportunities around you. Like you said, what do you love?
Yeah.
That can kind of come very easily to you.
Yeah.
And also like who are the kind of people that you're around a lot and how can you help them? Mm-hmm. Like, are you around a lot of creatives? Can you find a way to help the creatives do like solve a genuine problem that they have and just looking for those opportunities? I think that's such a great side hustle. Not everyone has to have 7 streams of income. In fact, it's a myth. Because like we said, the people that go online like me and say, oh, I have five streams of income, is usually stemming from like the one thing. And there's this saying that's been going around on social media. It says the average millionaire has seven streams of income. And that can also be quite deceptive to people because they're like, oh, this millionaire, oh, they had seven things that made them a millionaire. No, because what those people don't tell you is that millionaire became a millionaire from one stream or that one thing. And that's how they, you know, got their financial breakthrough. And then because of that, they've started other businesses off the back of that to serve usually the same customers, but just finding different ways to serve the same customers. But people don't say that. So now people think, oh, I have to have five streams of income. No.
It's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. And we get fed all these messages as young people. And it's like, no wonder we all feel like overwhelmed and anxious because it's a lot. Like just focus on one thing that you love, like, or one job that makes, that brings in the big bacon.
Yes.
And then something else on the side that you also enjoy. Ultimately, you have to enjoy it 100%. Because life is for living.
It's
guys.
So exhausting. Like, oh, drop shipping, crypto. I'm like, oh, it's a lot. It's a lot.
So you have built your personal brand online and you believe that there's a really clear method to doing it, that anyone can do it with the right guidance. So give us the Kenny 101 on personal branding.
I love it. Do you know what? Yes, I think anyone can build a personal brand because it wasn't even something, how do I word it? Because I think everyone has, and it's going to sound a bit cliche, but everyone has a story. Everyone has something to share, right? And I think that the mistake that I see a lot of people make and that I've made when trying to do a personal brand is trying to start up building a personal brand is trying to do so on lots of different multiple platforms at once alongside like a full-time job. Like, I think that it's really important to focus on one platform at a time, basically. Like focus on that one platform, learn that platform, like understand how it works. Because lots of different platforms have lots of different, you know, algorithms. So I think it's really important to understand the platform. And number two, Ali Abdaal says this thing about finding your unfair advantage, right? So what is the thing that you have done or the thing that just makes you different from everyone? Or just that one thing that you think you can do very well, whether that's teach, just find something that's very unique to you and start talking about that. And you can make that kind of your niche and the thing that you start to talk about.
What's your unfair advantage?
I think my unfair advantage was the fact that and I didn't realize this because I thought a lot of the things I was doing was just like what everyone else did, like buying a house at 26 and, you know, being able to earn a certain amount at quite a young age. And I just kind of, there was a point where I thought this is the norm. And actually speaking to people and I was like, oh, okay. So this is something that people would actually want to know how to do because this is...
Well, we're doing a whole podcast on it. So it must be. Yeah.
And like, this is something that people would really love to learn about. So I was like, you know, I'm going to talk about this online. Like, lots of people don't know about contracting. I'm going to talk about it online. Lots of people don't know about lots of, you know, how to optimize, especially young people and especially young women, how to negotiate, how to optimize the opportunities in front of them. I was like, I'm going to talk about that because I feel like actually I've done a decent job at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What would you say then for all the haters out there that will say that you have achieved all of this because you are privileged? which is true. You get trolls like that. So no, we're not lying. Like a lot of people will say that to you. Like you bought your first house at 26. Mm. You've hit 100K salary. You must have some element of privilege.
No, I've actually had those comments and it shocks me because I look at myself, first of all, because of the kind of person I am, I don't even think I've done anything that special. Like I always say, like, I don't actually think I've done anything that remarkable. I don't know how. Yeah. Like to me, it's just like, I'm just doing my best every day. And there's lots of people that have done way more. Like there's people earning 200K at like 24 or something. Mm-hmm. So it's not even that serious to me. And that's number one. That's the first thought that comes to mind. And then the second thing that comes to mind about the privilege thing, I'm guessing when people say that, I'm guessing they just mean maybe I've come for money or like my mummy and my daddy handed me some money to buy the property, which was not the case actually. I mean, yes, they let me live at home, which I'm so grateful for. And I guess to an extent that is a privilege because not everyone could do that, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of being handed any money or coming from that, it's actually quite the opposite. Definitely wasn't born into any kind of wealth or anything. I only moved to the UK when I was like 10 years old. So I wasn't even born here. And I'm pretty sure there was a time where my mum had like two jobs because I have four siblings and, you know, just trying to like make sure we're all like staying afloat. And, you know, it was like, there was a time where I didn't, okay, let me not go into the sub stories, but basically in a nutshell.
It's wild, isn't it, that people say that?
Yeah, like, it's wild because I see where I look at like just how things were for me just 10 years ago. And it was so, so, so different. Like so, so different. Mm-hmm. So yeah, nothing handed over to me in any way. I think I was going to say, I didn't have a bedroom. Like there was a point where I didn't have a bedroom of my own. So I had to like share a bedroom with my mom. But mm-hmm. anyway, so that's not very privileged. That doesn't sound very privileged to me.
Yeah.
But you mentioned
early on that a mentor really helped you. Like, was that someone who was well connected? Like, and so were able to help you? Because you said they helped you get into compliance. Yeah. Or was it just someone who was there to be your cheerleader?
She was just a lady that went to my church. We used to call her auntie. Like, oh, hi, Auntie Tokwe. Yeah. That was her name. And she was just also someone that migrated to this country. Like, she wasn't well connected at all, but she just kind of looked over my CV. She just knew what I didn't know and just showed me why. She didn't help me with the interview. She didn't hand me the job and say, hire Kenny. I had to go through the process. Yeah. I had to apply for the job. I had to work on my CV myself. She just looked over it.
But it's nice to have those mentors in place that can just point you in the right direction. Somebody who's just been there, done it a little bit more, like can just look over things and like, they don't have to be the most well-connected person in the world,
100%.
But just to get a different perspective on what you're doing. It sounds 100%. Like she, well, for you to mention her on the podcast, it sounds like she had a big impact.
She played a huge, huge part. And it's one thing about networking that I think that even myself, like I've got wrong in the past, is thinking that it only pays off to network with someone that's like way above you, or like I need to network with the CEO and the manager and no, babe. Sometimes it's the person next to you that maybe knows someone that you want to speak to, or you know, just it's sometimes you can network with anyone, like it's because you know they might know someone or something
just
that
their
you
perspective
don't.
On things is good sometimes. 100%,
100%. So it plays such a huge part. So for me, it feels very fulfilling because I've had that. It feels so fulfilling talking about what I talk about online, and you know, I do one-to-one coaching sessions as well now. So when I talk to people about their careers, and I can be that person, honestly, like nothing makes me happier. Mm-hmm. Like I love it, just passing on that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. We like to talk on the podcast how nobody, whoever comes onto the podcast, despite you know doing everything you've achieved in life, no one's perfect, and everybody's working through getting better at something. And it's really important to remember that like nobody sat on this chair as the perfect package.
Yes.
For you, what is it that you're trying to get better at right now? Ooh. Like,
do you know, I posted on LinkedIn about this morning, being organized. Like I'm trying to be way more organized. Last year, things, you know, even just starting out social media, had a few viral moments and things kind of blew up, and I had all these opportunities coming to me, and I honestly was burnt out, didn't know what to do, didn't know how to organize myself, didn't have any systems in place. Mm-hmm. So I was just a bit all over the place, like honestly. So what I'm trying to work on, literally actively working on right now, is putting systems in place for things.
Yeah.
Cause I'm trying to be consistent on, you know, like I'm on a career break actually right now. And I'm spending that time just focusing more on like socials and, you know, the coaching, the mentoring. Mm-hmm. I'm building I've actually started building a bootcamp actually, like a community bootcamp to help people upskill, because I'm so passionate about skills and how
really
it can
cool
kickstart everything for you. Like having the right skill and upskilling can just kickstart everything, because now you have the income, and now you can save, and now you can invest, and you know, financial freedom, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, just trying to, there's quite a lot of things that I'm doing at the moment. So I'm just trying to put systems in place, like for the content, trying to put systems in place for the business, trying to put systems in place for coaching.
And because you're having to motivate yourself to do all of that, you've got no one to check in to be
100%. Yeah, so it's really, really important. And like, I notice how sane I am when things are just nice and organized and things are in a calendar and things are just, there's a system for it. I love it. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to be more organized.
Tell us a bit more about the bootcamp then. Where can people find out more about it?
Yes. No, it's called The Pivot Place. And yeah, it's for people that want to pivot into a non-coding role within tech. You know how tech is a bit of a buzzword now. So people think it's oversaturated, but it's really not. It's really not oversaturated. There's lots of roles. Mm-hmm. So specifically, we help people with business analysis and Scrum Master roles in a tech capacity. And yeah, just on Instagram, The Pivot Place. And yeah, that's where you find us. We actually have a webinar tomorrow, but yeah, this won't be out by then.
Amazing. Okay. Yes. And so it's been amazing to chat to you on the Talk 20s podcast. I've loved hearing all about your career journey, and I've taken away so many different things. And I kind of wish that this was an episode that I had listened to like early on in my 20s, because I think it kind of really can set you up for success in the way that you look at your career and try and maximize it for both something that fulfills you, but also maximizes the money that you're bringing in as well. So thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom with us today. But we always end the podcast by asking the same question to every single one of our guests. Mm. And it's, if you could look back at 20-year-old Kenny and give her just one piece of advice that would see her through her 20s, what would you want to say to her?
Ooh, great question. I would say that life happens in seasons. You have like, you know how I spoke about at the start, just being on a high last year, January. And then there was like mid-year 2023 where it was a low. And you know when you go into those lows and you almost can't see a way out? Just to understand that life comes in seasons, and don't be too harsh on yourself, because it's like, yeah, even if things are down now, you're going to have an up season. Like there's the only way is up when you're when you've hit rock bottom. So just understand that life comes in seasons and just ride the wave a bit better.
I
and
love
have
that.
Faith. Have faith in the process.
I love that. What great advice. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Talk 20s podcast. Please make sure you hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode of us in the studio, and we'll see you next week.